We're holding on page 12 in Ervin Oistes. So we quoted yesterday, we learned yesterday a drosha that Rav Chisda said in the name of Mori Bar Mar about the size of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So now another drosha from him, which eventually we're also going to relate back to things involving Torah Sheba'al Peh. And it might be, I mean, I was mentioning yesterday, it's a little hard to see what the connection is this between this and the previous Gemara, but maybe it is. I mean, most, if not all, of what's in Masechta Eruvin is things that are bonim. In fact, Marsha mentioned something along those lines at the end of Masechta. So therefore, maybe here, more than any other place, the Gemara wants to stress the importance of Torah Sheba'al Peh and of Gzeiros and Takanos de Rabbanim. Anyway, for Omer of Chista, Dorash Mori Bar Mar. My dichtiv was meaning the what does it mean in a pasuk in Yirmiyah? Here, Ani Hashem, Yirmiyah says Hashem showed me in a nevuah. V'hine shnei dudoi te'enim mu'odim lefnei heichal Hashem. There are two baskets of figs sitting in front of mu'odim. Rashi explains means mu'chonim, prepared in front of the heichal, in front of the Beis Mikdash. And he goes on to explain, and he continues and describes haduda echad te'enim tovus ma'od k'te'eni habakoros. He says one basket is full of really good figs, like the early ripening figs, which we find in various psukim. Those are always the extra good ones. So therefore, the Gemara interjects, Elu atzadikim gmurim. So that basket refers to the tzadikim gmurim among the Jewish people. In context to the pasuk, actually it does. Marsha points out, if you look at the whole nevuah over there, it's a shortish perek, but Yirmiyah sees over there, he sees this one basket full of good figs and the other one full of spoiled figs. And Hashem tells him the first one represents the Jews who went into Golos Yechonya. They include the Chorash v'Hamaskir, the great outstanding Talmid Chachamim. And they were the ones who eventually their descendants are going to return to Eretz Yisrael and build the second Beis Mikdash, as opposed to the other basket, Hashem goes on to tell them, refers to the Jews who remain behind in Eretz Yisrael, most of whom are Rishoyim, and they're going to end up getting destroyed at the time of the Churban. So even in the simple sense of the pasuk, the two baskets represent the tzaddikim versus the Rishoyim. But what the Gemara is adding over here is that we're talking about tzaddikim gmurim versus rishoyim gmurim. Where from the pasuk, all you would have is the Jews who were taken into Golus and Babel versus the ones who remain behind in Eretz Yisrael. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara points out in Sanhedrin that you had King Yehoyakim, and then he died when he was captured by the Babylonians before they even brought him to Babel. He died, and his son Yechoniah became the next king for 3 months, and then Nebuchadnezzar besieged the city, and Yehoyachin went out and surrendered, and with him went into Golos the Chorash v'Hamaskir. So the Gemara summarizes it, and Yehoyachin himself was a tremendous Rosha, but his subjects were basically tzaddikim. And you see it actually in various psukim in Sefer Yirmiyah, whereas by the time Tzidkiyahu became king, after Yechoniah, it was the other way around. Tzaddikim had been taken off to Bavel. Tzidkiyahu himself personally was a tzaddik, as we learned about him at the end of Shabbos, but his subjects were mostly Rishoyim. So the two baskets represent those two groups. So again, the first basket represents Eluat Tzadikim Agmurim, the perfect Tzadikim. V'adud Echad Te'inim Rois. Then Yirmiyah continues describing the second basket is full of bad figs. So the Gemara explains, Elu Rishoyim Gmurim. So that basket refers to the Rishoyim Gmurim. Now, Yirmiyah goes on to say in the psukim over there how they're going to be destroyed at the time of the Churban. So, b'shem ha'toymar, so you're going to think, therefore, ovad sivra muvotel sikuyam, their hope is gone and their future is bottled. Those Jews who are represented by the Te'enim Arois, that's it, they're goners and we're never going to hear from them again. Nope, Talmud Loimar, we have a different pasuk in Shir HaShirim that says Hadudoyim Nosnu Reach. Now, the simple meaning of Dudoyim is a type of flower, like you have what Reuven brought to Leah, and then Rachel asked her for them. And in fact, the Gemara is going to bring soon a drosha where Rava understands it exactly in that sense, in the sense of the Dudoyim flowers. The Gemara elsewhere discusses a few possibilities what they are, and different Mephoshim on the Pesukim also discuss the violets or mandrakes or whatever, anyway. But here Rav Chisda is darshaning that Dudoyim is Meloshin Dud, Meloshin those two baskets that we were just talking about. So Hadudoyim Nosnu Reach, so both baskets are giving forth a fragrance, meaning Elu Ve'elu Asidim Sheyitnu Reach. In the future, both groups, both the Tzadikim Gmurim and even the Rishoyim Gmurim, are going to give a fragrance of, in other words, that even the Rishoyim, they're not always going to remain Rishoyim, may have also a fragrance of Torah. Even Maharsha says they're like the Hadas. It has a fragrance, but no tam. That means people who have, so that represents people who have Torah without mitzvahs. Usually, actually, we say the other way around. Usually, we say the lulav is the ones who have Torah without mitzvahs, and the hadas the other way around, mitzvahs without Torah. But that's how Maharsha says it over here. Anyway, the point is, so we see that even those Rishoyim Gemurim, they still have a fragrance and they still have a future as part of the Jewish people. Maharsha also mentions another drasha in this connection, where when it says by Yitzchak, when Yaakov came to get the brachas, by Yorach Asureyach Begodov, so the Gemara Darshan's Altuki Begodov, Ela Boidov, even the disloyal, treacherous Jews also have a fragrance in Gan Eden with them. And that's what Shlomo is expressing in this pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And therefore we're saying, even though Hashem is saying at the time to Yirmiyah that these people represented by the bad figs in the basket are going to have to undergo terrible Yisurim, but nevertheless, they're still going to remain part of the Jewish people and they have a future as part of it as well. So the Gemara continues, Dorash Rabba, my dichtiv ha-dudoyim nosnu reyach. Let's talk about that pasuk some more. The dudoyim have given forth their fragrance. So here Rabba is understanding that it means dudoyim, as in the usual sense, as some kind of fragrant flower. So Elo Bachuri Yisrael Shalai Talmud Tam Chet. This refers to the young Jewish men who have never tasted the taste of sin. So therefore, in other words, Maharsha explains when people do averus, then we have, like we learned in Shabbos, nudi nosan rechoy, that the fragrance is described as being given away and departing. Here you have the other way around, because they don't have averus. They're young men, and in most societies are usually involved in znus, but Jewish young men are not. They keep themselves for marriage. So therefore, they're giving forth a fragrance of that they don't have that chet. And when the pasuk continues, "Va'al psachenu kol megadim," that same pasuk continues in Shir HaShirim, by our entrances are all the delicacies. So the Gemara is darshining megadim meloshin magidos elu bnei Yisrael shemagidos pischein lebaleim. This refers to the Jewish women when they're married, where they tell their openings to their husbands. In other words, that they tell their husband when from their womb there's come blood and she needs, and they need to separate because she's nidor or zava. So they tell them. They don't say, well, nobody's going to know about it and I have a taiva for it and who cares. They're careful about these things. So that's described in the pasuk as va'al psachenu kol megadim. And the davar loshen achar sha'oigdos pischeim ba'alein. Another way of understanding is megadim is meloshen oigdos, meloshen tying up. They tie up their openings and reserve them for their husbands, that they're not mizane with anybody else. So therefore, Shlomo, and this metaphor is praising the young Jewish men and women that they're careful with these kinds of things. And the pasuk continues, Chadoshim gam yeshanim dodi tzafanti loch, the new as well as the old, my beloved, which is Hashem, I've hidden them away for you. So that means, Omra Knesset Yisrael, lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means the Jewish people say to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Harbe gzeiros gazarti al atzmi, yosim imasha gazarta alai, I made upon myself many gzeiros, much more than you put on me, because we have all the gzeiros to Rabbanon, v'kiyamtim, and I've kept them. So we have chadoshim, the new ones that are newer, that are later than when the Torah was given, because they were made by the Chachamim, as well as Yeshanim, as well as the old original ones. So Maharsha says, this directly relates to what we were just talking about. For example, consider how much in Hilchos Nida, consider how much of the halachas of Taras and Mishpacha is based on Gzeiros de Rabbanon and even Chumras of Jewish women. The way that we keep these halachas nowadays is far beyond what it says in the Pesukim. So that's a perfect example of we made many Gzeiros on ourselves and we keep them and we keep them to the letter. So Maharsha says, okay, why does it mention Chadoshim first? One thing is the Gemara is going to explain soon that Divrei Sofrim are even more important than Divrei Torah. Therefore, it's appropriate that the Chadoshim, the new ones, should be mentioned even before the old ones. There is, by the way, a very interesting thing in this connection. There's the famous Gemara in Bechoros where Rabbi Yeshua has a whole debate in symbolism with the wise men of Athens, Sovei Divrei Atonah. And one of the things that goes on over there is they ask him at one point, if a person borrowed money and he doesn't have any, and he doesn't have what to pay back, why would the lender be willing to lend him again? And Rabbi Yeshua answers them with a mashal. He says, imagine, for example, a person goes out to the meadow to cut reeds, and he finds he's cut a lot of them, and now it's too heavy a bundle. What does he do? He keeps on cutting more and adding them to the bundle, and eventually somebody comes along and helps him lift them, and then he's able to take much more than he would have been able to originally. So what's going on over there? What's the mashal and what's the nimshal over there? So there's an explanation the Vilna Gaon has on that whole story, where he explains that many of the things that they're debating about have to do with the Rabbi Yeshua is standing for the specialty of the Jewish people, that we're the Aman Nivcher, and they're standing for that, Kachal HaGoyim Beis Yisrael, or we're greater than you, and all of that. So he explains that particular one is they're asking him, given that you Jews didn't even keep the mitzvahs d'Araisa, what's the sense of even having adding mitzvahs d'Rabbanan? It would be like borrowing money and you can't pay it back, and then you're just going, you're going to the lender, to Hashem, to ask him to lend you more. What's the point of it? And he answers them with the mashal of the reeds, that the point is, once you have this larger bundle and somebody else notices you need help with it and he helps you, so therefore adrabah, having the more reeds helps you be able to carry the original, the same way having more gzeiras d'rabbanan helps us keep the dinim d'araisa, which yes, otherwise before that we were being careless with them, but now it helps uphold and strengthen. So the Gemara continues. Rav Chista had there was one of the Chachamim who used to arrange a gadda in front of him. So this Tahumer Abonim was teaching a gadda. He was teaching Ein Yaakov, let's say. So Rav Chista asked him, So he asks him, have you heard anything? Any explanation of what the Chadoshim Gam Yeshonim of this pasuk, when it says "Dirdi Tzafanti Loch," my beloved Hashem, I've saved them, I've preserved them for you. My he, what is that pasuk referring to? So this may have been before Rava's Dirasha that we said before, or maybe the Chisid didn't like that Dirasha, so he wants a different one. Amalei, so this how Humen Abanan answers him: Elu Mitzvahs Kalos and Mitzvahs Chamuris. It refers to the easier mitzvahs and the harder mitzvahs. So we're saying that we keep them both equally, and then we're preserving all of them for Hashem. Amalei, Rav Chista says, well, how can you call them new and old? Why? Was the Torah given piecemeal? No, the Torah was given all at once on Har Sinai. Now, Iyun Yaakov points out there is, in fact, a machloikas about that in Gittin. There is a machloikas over there in the Gemara where the Torah chasuma nitna, was the Torah given all at once to Moshe Rabbeinu, or was it Torah megillah nitna? Each section of the Torah was given at a different time, and not so much when it was given. You have the different opinions, whether it was all given on Har Sinai, or whether some mitzvahs were given in Oyo Moed or whatever. There the Gemara is talking about more the writing of the Torah. Was it that only at the end of the 40 years Hashem told Moshe to write it all down, and that became the Torah that we have? Or is it that throughout the 40 years in the desert, whenever Hashem taught Moshe a mitzvah, or whenever an episode happened, then Hashem would dictate to Moshe to write it then, and then eventually, at the end of his life, he tells him to assemble that all into the Torah that we have? So here, Rav Chista says Iyun Yaakov is evidently following the opinion that Torah chasuma nitna, the Torah was given to be written all at once, so you can't really talk about chadoshim versus yeshon. With that said, though, Marsha says maybe what it could mean is, what did this Hahumin Abanon, what was he thinking? Doesn't he know that? Is within mitzvahs themselves, you have within each area of mitzvahs, you have kalos and chamuris. For example, in Shabbos, you have chamuris, which are the 39 malachas, and then you have kalos, which is the Isur Tchumin. The Isur Tchumin is Dirabanan, or even to the extent that's Daraisa, it's not one of the 39 malachas. There's no Isur Skila involved. The most there is, according to that, would be, as we learned previously, an Isur Malkus. Similarly with Arayas, for example, you have things that are Chomer, that are Chayiv Misa, and you have things that are much more lenient, for example, Isur Yichud. So therefore, this Hahumen Abanan may have meant that Shabbos and Arayas themselves were originally given, and then later on, the Tchumen was added on top of Shabbos, and Yichud was added on top of Arayas. So therefore, they can still be called Chadoshim and Yishonim. But still, Rav Chista is saying, the fact is, if they're all given by Hashem to Moshe, we're talking about the part of Yichud that's Daraisa, and the part of Tchumen that, at least according to some opinions, is Daraisa, then how can you call it Chadoshim versus Yishonim? So Ella halolu divrei Torah, halolu divrei Sofrim. So rather, Rav Chista tells him, like Rava said before, that it means divrei Torah versus divrei Sofrim. So now we can talk about new versus old, because the divrei Sofrim are in fact newer, since they were enacted only later. Okay. Dorash Rava. Then Rava darshins another thing regarding this, regarding Divrei Sofrim versus Divrei Torah. My dichtiv was, I mean, a pasuk at the end of Kehelas. The Yosef Mehema Bnihi Zohar, more than all of this, my son, be careful. Previously, throughout the whole Sefer Kehelas, Shlomo is telling people about you have to listen to Hashem. You have to realize that what Hashem says is your purpose in life, and so forth. So now, even more than that, my son, be careful. Asois Sfarim Harbe Ein Kates of making many books. There would be no end. Which means Bni Hizohib Divrei Sofrim Yosim Divrei Torah means Shlomo is telling his sons, and his son is Talmidim, because Talmidim Kurim Bonim, that you have to be more careful with Divrei Sofrim more than with Divrei Torah. So in the previous psukim, actually, it mentions that it mentions Divrei Chachamim Kador Voinus. The words of the Chachamim are like goads. A goad is a stick with a metal point that you use to get an ox or whatever animal to go in the right direction. So therefore, he's mentioning the Yosef Mehema more even than what we talked about before about things midaraisa. Be careful with those Divrei Chachamim Kador Voinus. So be careful even more than with Divrei Torah. Shalolo with Divrei Torah. Yeshman Esav Aloisese. Because when it comes to Divrei Torah, not everything in a way is so serious. So there are things that are mitzvah saseh, and there are things that are mitzvah loisese. And mitzvah saseh, after all, don't really have a particular punishment to them. We have in yesterday's Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talked about Ha'ur Nedar and all that, but nevertheless, there's no particular punishment for them. Whereas when it comes to Divrei Sofrim, anybody who violates them is Chayiv Misa B'dei Shemayim across the board. So Rashi explains, by the way, the whole pasuk before it. The pasuk before it goes Divrei Chachamim Kadrovoinus Uchmas Meres Nituyim Balei Asupers Nitnu Meroya Echad. And then after that is the pasuk that Gemara is quoting over here, the Yosef Mehem. So it means Divrei Chachamim Kadrovoinus means the words of Torah Shebaal Peh, which were originally given to Moshe. So we're not yet talking about Dinim Derabanan, but they were given to Moshe Baal Peh, and later on, eventually, there became machlokas about them because people forgot details about them. Nevertheless, Nitnu Meroya Echad, they were all given from the one shepherd, Moshe Rabbeinu. And now Shlomo is saying Yosef Mehema, even more than what was given B'Sinai, what was given in Torah Shebachsav, be even more careful with Torah Shebaal Peh. But as he's going to go on to say, why weren't they written? Because there would be no end of it. And the point is, Divrei Sofrim often, by the way, doesn't just mean mitzvahs d'rabbanan. Often, Divrei Sofrim also means things that the Chachamim learned out with the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Adreshes Behem. So even though those have the status of things d'araisa, nevertheless, they're called Divrei Sofrim because they were brought to light by the Chachamim. So when it comes to those, Kol Oyra Len, Chayv Len, Misa B'dei Shemayim, person is Chayv Misa B'dei Shemayim for that. So Kadrovoinus means like goads. So again, a goad is a long wooden stick with a metal tip that you use to goad an animal to get it to go in the right path. So therefore, the Divrei Chachamim are like that. They guide you in the right paths of life. They're like firmly fixed in nails. Balei Asupa, as Rashi explains on the pasuk, means like nails with big heads. Nitnu Meroya Echad, they were all given by the one shepherd Moshe Rabbeinu. So Divrei Torah was saying some of them have punishment, some not. But Divrei Sofrim, Kol Overal, Divrei Sofrim, Chayiv Misa B'dei Shemayim. Now, Maharsha says specifically that doesn't mean all Derabbanans, maybe. It means things Derabbanan that they made as a geder, as a fence around the mitzvahs loisese that would otherwise involve Misa. So in other words, Maharsha says, look, if you have, for example, a mitzvahs esse, and then the Chachamim put a fence around it, then fine. We're not going to say a person is over on that, he's chayiv misa. But when you have, there's something that would itself, midaraisa, be chayiv misa, and then the Chachamim put a fence around it to prevent you from getting anywhere near that. For example, muktza, for example, shnias la'arayas, which we're going to talk about soon. For example, as Maharsha mentions in the story of Rabbi Akiva that we're going to have soon when he was in jail, Natilas Yadayim, which is ultimately based on the idea that you have to eat truma. You can't eat truma when you're tameh, because that would involve Misa B'dei Shemayim. So those kinds of things are what we're saying, that when a person is over on those, then he's chayiv Misa B'dei Shemayim. There's a point that Rabbeinu Yonah makes in his Sefer Sha'arei Tshuva. He explains what taka is the logic. Why should Divrei Sofrim be so much more severe than Divrei Torah? And he says the reason is because if a person is over on Divrei Torah, usually it's because, okay, he has a taiva, he has a yetzahara. But when he's over on Divrei Sofrim, many times what it'll mean is he doesn't respect the authority of the Chachamim to make Xeris and Takonis for us. So that's a much more serious thing. Where a person is over on some Daraisa, it's not so much that he's saying Hashem has no rights over me. He's just saying, yeah, I know Hashem said to do this mitzvah, but I have a Yetzirah. But to be over on Divrei Sofrim, he says, is much more serious because it amounts to saying that I don't believe that they have authority over us. Fine, but... Right, but nevertheless, you could say that still, okay, a person has a Yetzirah, you know, they can understand that kind of, but yeah. Anyway. So Shema Toimah, now you're going to say in Yesh Behen Mamash, if Divrei Sofrim, Torah Shabal Peh, and Torah Shabal Peh in the wider sense and also in the narrower sense, meaning specifically the Gzeiros and the Takonis of the Chachamim, im Yesh Behen Mamash, if they're so important, Mipnei Malo Nichtavu, so why weren't they written like Torah Shabal Saab? And the answer is, as Shlomo continues in the Pasuk, Omar Kroas, Sois Sfarim Harbe and Kates. Because the Pasuk said there would be no end of making books. As we learned yesterday, Torah Shabbat Peh is 3,200 times the size of the world. So it would be impossible to write down the whole Torah Shabbat Peh in books. And therefore, it was left to be Baal Peh. What? It's sure it's part of Torah Shabbat Peh, yeah. Anything outside of Torah Shabbat Sab is Torah Shabbat Peh, pretty much, yeah. But again, within Torah Shabbat Peh itself, you have various groups. You have so Tosfos mentions a point over here, an interesting point. So you have Torah Shabbat Sab, then you have there's things that are halacha l'moshe m'sinai, which the definition about the technical definition of a halacha l'moshe m'sinai is a halacha where there's no remez for it in the pasuk. So for a classic example is Nisuch HaMayim. This is that you have to pour water on them. It's Be'ach Sukkos. There's no remez for it in the pot. There is an opinion in the Gemara in Mod Cotton that says that there is because of Mem Yud Mem over there, but the other opinion in the Gemara says that there's no remez for it in the posit. It's strictly Baal Peh. So that's one group. Then you have things that the Chachamim learned out throughout the generations with the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Nidreshes Behem. And then you have many of those have the status of things D'Oraisa. A classic example is among the Arayas. It doesn't list among the Arayas that a man is not allowed to marry or have relations with his daughter. We learn that. The Gemara says we learn it from Gzeira Shavah, but it's still considered Daraisa. It's still one of the 613 mitzvahs. And the Rambam stresses that point. He says in Sefer HaMitzvahs, usually we don't count in the Nachdama to Sefer HaMitzvahs. In the Shoshim, he explains, usually we don't count things that are learned with 13 mitzvahs among the 613 mitzvahs. Otherwise, there'd be a lot more than 613. But sometimes Chazal will tell us about a particular mitzvah that it's Migufe Torah or something to that effect. And an example of that is that. So you have that. Then you have the various gzeiros and takonis of the Chachamim throughout the generations, asu siyag la-Torah, like it says in Pirkei Avos. And then you have all the different deeper explanations of Torah, of remez and drush and soid to learn out various things. So all of those and all of those are various components of Torah Shabbat Peh. So yesterday we talked about the Megillah, that the Megillah that we said first, David describes in Tilim Rechava Mitzvah Chamaoid, Eov, or rather his friend Sofra and Amasi, says a pasuk over there, Aruka Me'eretz Midor Rechava Miniyam, it's longer than the earth and wider than the sea. Yechezkel sees it written on the front and the back. Zechariah sees it folded up in half, and the Gemara made a whole calculation. We learned yesterday that the Torah is 3,200 times the size of the Torah Shabbat Peh, is 3,200 times the size of the world. So that's Shlomo saying in this passage, it would be impossible to write it all down. Therefore, to begin with, as important as it is, it wasn't written down.
The whole
Torah Shabbat Peh. Eventually, it had to be written down because people were going to forget it. But yes. So now we don't even have the tiniest fraction of it, yeah. We have a small fraction of it, of course, but there's a lot more that, yeah. Tosfos, by the way, mentions an interesting point over here. Tosfos, this is a two-line Tosfos, which is very difficult to understand. Tosfos says, "V'gamba halacha l'moshe m'sinai l'nitin." They also weren't given as halacha l'moshe m'sinai k'deish lo yishtakhu, so that they're not forgotten. Now, what does Tosfos mean by that? Many mafoshim deal with it. There's a footnote over here referring to the Chavas Yor, and in fact, the various Mephoshim on the sides of the Gemara, Gyuri Nashas, and Agos Ma'arav Ransburg, and all of them also refer to the Chavas Yor. He discusses what it means is, now like this, you have the Rambam writes in his Akdama to Pirush Mishnayos and in other places, that one thing about Halach HaMosh Misinai, it's impossible that it should be forgotten. Everything that was taught as Halach HaMosh Misinai, of the narrow kind that we were saying, that have no remez and a posik, none of them were ever forgotten. However, the Chavis Yorv says that Tosfos over here may be disagreeing with that. They say Halachos L'Moshe Misinai could be forgotten as well. Therefore, Hashem, so in other words, what Tosfos is saying is, the question is, all these various Gzeiros and Takonis of the Chachamim, we're going to talk about soon, Erevin and Tulis Yadayim, Shnius La'arayas, Mukta, all these kinds of things, why weren't they to begin with given as Halachos L'Moshe Misinai? Why did Hashem leave it for the Chachamim of later generations to come up with them? And so Tosfos is saying, this is how the Chavis Yor explains, if they were given as Halachos L'Moshe Misinai, they might eventually be forgotten. So therefore, Hashem left it for the Chachamim to do in later generations so that they wouldn't be forgotten. And then there's different other points, some of the Mephoshim in the back of the Gemara deal with various other angles on what Tosfos might mean. One explanation, Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains, and Maratz Chayos explains somewhat similarly, that precisely because Halacha L'Moshe Misinai has no remez and a posuk, therefore there's a good chance of them being forgotten. Mashenkin, things that we learn out, things that the Chachamim learn out with the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Adreshes Behem, there's much more of a likelihood they'll be remembered because you'll remember the pasuk that they're based on. So therefore, that would be why. So we're talking about things that. So according to that, Tosfos is not talking about Gzeiros Dakonis Derabanan. Rather, they're talking about things that the Chachamim darshin with the Yud Gimel Midas, that instead of them being as Halacha L'Moshe, given as Halacha L'Moshe Misinai without any anchor in a pasuk, instead they were left, Hashem made them anchored in Psukim so that there's less of a chance of forgetting them. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in fact, refers in that connection. You have a Gemara, the Gemara in Temura, that says after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, they forgot hundreds of Halachas L'Moshe Misinai and many Kavachomers and Zeta Shabbos and all. So the Halachas L'Moshe Misinai, they were never able to reconstruct. Whereas the Gemara says over there, the things with the Zeta Shabbos and the other things like that, Osnio Ben Knaz, was able to restore them by using the other parts of Torah that were still there. So therefore, we see that Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is much more fragile in that sense. Another one of the Mephoshim in the back of the Gemara of Elazar Moshe Horowitz also points out, since we just said that there's such a severe punishment for being over on Divrei Sofrim, so Hashem didn't want to make them as to just be part of Halachas L'Moshe Misinai, but rather they should be as Divrei Sofrim, so that will take them much more seriously, as we just said. He says that the vote is what Tosfos is saying is Kadesh Lo Yishtachu. If they were to be forgotten, then they would have a person would be punished for them like he's being over on Divrei Sofrim. So like this, Hashem left it to actually be in a way that would be less likely to be forgotten by being done by the Sofrim. Okay. Now let's douse in the end of that same posuk, that same posuk that we said, the Yosef Mehem of Bnei Zara, so Sfarim Harbe and Kates. The end of that posuk is, by the way, before we go further with that, actually, I wanted to mention another interesting thing that Chida says in this connection, in his Pirush on this Gemara. He says, one thing is also the advantage of Torah Shabbat Peh originally not being written down is it forced the Chachamim to memorize huge amounts of material. And that itself, he said, had a tremendous effect on refining their neshamas. That's why he says they were on such a tremendous level. Once the Mishnah and later on the Gemara was written down, that's why we start talking about Yuridus Hadoris, is because once it was written down and you don't have to put in as much effort into memorizing it, then it means they didn't have that refinement of their neshamas as much as they used to in previous generations. And he says that with this, you have a certain key to understanding the difference between periods in Jewish history. So he doesn't explain that in detail, but what he means apparently is the same way as, for example, when the Mishnah was written, then you have the transition from the Tanoim to the Amoraim, who are on a lower level. And once the Gemara was written, then you have the transition from the Amoraim to the Goyim, who are also on a lower level. In the same vein, for example, eventually you have the Sfarim of, eventually you have, for example, that in particular, printing came into existence, and now it becomes much easier to get a hold of Sfarim and therefore to be able to learn them rather than having to memorize them. So therefore, that's also that created the part of the transition between the Rishonim and the Achronim. I kind of wonder what the Chidah would say that in that case, nowadays when we have the internet with everything that has, we don't need to memorize anything. You can look everything up. You can look everything up. The Shas Maisa, what would he say about that? But yeah. People have mentioned to me, by the way, a vote in that connection. You know, you have a famous expression from the Zohar, Tamid Chacham Ikri Shabbos. So two different people have told me a vote on that. It means if a person knows how to and knows exactly where something is, even on Shabbos, when you can't use Google and you can't use Safari and you can't use all these online resources, then you know he's a Talmud Chacham. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, the pasuk continues, V'lahag harbi yegias baser. So what does that mean? So the simple meaning is V'lahag harbi means the tremendous effort to learn Torah. Yegias baser is it wears out the body. But the Gemara Daushans, Amar a Papa, Bread of Achaba Adam, Shmei the Rabba, or the Achaba Ula, Melamed, he's going to Daushan the word Lahag as being similar to La'ag, which means to make fun of, to mock. Shakola Loyag, Al Dirbe Chachamim, Nidin Betsoya Resachas. Anybody who mocks the words of the Chachamim is going to end up with Yigias Basar, with the wearing out of his flesh, meaning that he's going to be punished with Tsoya Resachas. We know famously from the Gemara in Gittin that Oysa Ish wound up like that, and he was Malig al Dirbe Chachamim. So that's the Yichtiv, Lahag Havi, Yigias Basar. Omale Rava, but Rava says, how can you douch in it that way? Miksiv la'ag, la'hagsiv. The fact is, the pasuk says la'hag with a hey. Now, it is true, Tosfa says, it is true that a person who's malig al divrei chachamim is nidin b'tzoyer nesachas, but Rava says, how can you learn that from this pasuk? That's not what the pasuk is saying. Ella, what it means is rather, kol ha'loyheg or ha'hoyga b'hen, means anybody who delves into words of Torah. A person is lahag maloshin hoiga, that he's carefully thinking into and speaking out the words of Torah, toyim behen tam baser, he'll taste the taste of meat in it. So Rashi explains it means that constantly a person learns Torah and he always finds something new and interesting in it. He always motz behem tam, like when a person eats meat, where you always have a good flavor in it. But still, Rava figures that still it wouldn't have been still over here. Maybe Rava is saying because lahag and la'ag are almost opposites, really. It's one thing, bonayach, bonayach, fine, a son is also a builder or whatever, but here, lahag, to delve into it and think about it, is almost the opposite of lahag, is almost the opposite of lahag, of la'ag, of mocking it. So therefore, Rava doesn't like the Jerusha. So Marsha mentions over here the Gemara in Bava Kama, or brings it in Perek Zayin of Tanya, Ba'adayin Lo'echil Mabisra de Torah, that Rav Nachman says over there to Rava, that I hadn't yet eaten beef, and therefore I couldn't come up with a good answer yet to your kasha. So we see, in other words, that there's a connection between learning Torah and eating meat. Another explanation, one of the Mephoshim says also, is you have the Gemara in Pesachim that says, Ama Oretz Osu Lechol Basu. So literally, then, when a person learns Divrei Torah, then he's Toyim Tam Basar. He has the right to taste and eat meat. So the Gemara just says over there, Am Aretz Asa Lechol Basar, and it darshens it from a pasuk. One idea behind it is, we'll get to it, Bes Hashem, when we get to that part of Pesachim. But one idea that some of the Mephoshim make over there is the idea is why Taka? What gives the right? What gives a person the right to shecht an animal and eat it? Is because he's on a higher level than the animal. So if the Am Aretz is not bringing himself to that higher level by learning Torah and being Mekayim Mitzvahs, then by what right does he have to do that? But there's other explanations as well. When we get to that Gemara in Pesachim a few months from now, Bez Hashem, then we'll talk about it. Memtes. What? Yeah. I mean, again, when we say also lachol basar, it doesn't literally mean he's also as in like he's, you know, it means you know he has no business basically. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, so in this connection, it happened when Rabbi Akiva was in jail. We know the famous story in Brachas, that he was teaching Torah publicly, and then Papus Ben Yehuda argued with him about it, and eventually the Romans arrested him. Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi was serving him. HaGarsi, Rashi says two possibilities. Either he came from a place called Geres, whatever, or that his job was, his day job for Parnassah, was grinding up peas to make beans, to make split peas, which are called grisin shalpul in Gemara terminology. Anyway, so he was serving Rabbi Akiva. Dodus HaRishonim, a sefer on Jewish history, makes an interesting point based on a Gemara in Pesachim. He explains when the Romans first arrested Rav Akiva, they arrested him, but they still, you know, they realize they can't just go and execute him on the spot or something. They'll have a worse revolt on their hands than they already did. So, and he explains over there based on a Gemara in Pesachim that Yechvoi, the father of Shimon Yechvoi, had a certain amount of pull with them, and therefore he was able to get that Rav Akiva is being kept under relatively lenient circumstances, and he even has one of his Talmidim able to come and serve. So every day Rabbi Yeshua would bring him a certain amount of water, an exact amount of water, where he'd have enough to wash his hands and also then enough to drink. One time the guard by the jail met up with Rabbi Yeshua. Omalei says, what's this all of a sudden that you have so much water? It's not necessarily like it was any more water than before. Marsha explains this guard is just using this as an excuse to harass Rabbi Yeshua. Shema lachta beis asurin at the tzarech. He says, what do you need all this extra water in order to tunnel out of the jail? What are you going to soften the dirt over there with the water and then make it easier to dig out a tunnel? Shofach chetzion v'inya chetzion. So he poured out half the water and left Rabbi Yeshua with only half of the water. Now, this took time. When eventually Rabbi Yeshua reached Rabbi Akiva's cell, Omaloi says, Yeshua, Iati Yadesh, Zokin Ani, V'chaye Tzluyin V'chayecha. Don't you realize that I'm old and my life depends on yours? I don't have any other food or water except what you're bringing me. Why did you delay? Why did you delay so much coming to me? So Rabbi Yeshua tells him what happened. Omalei, so Rabbi Akiva says, okay, well, you know, at least you're here. Tenli Mayim, little Yodai, give me water to wash my hands. Amalei, Rabbi Yeshua tells him, it's not even going to be enough for you to drink. Little Yodayim Magiyin, is it going to be enough for you to wash your hands? Then you're going to have nothing to drink. Omalei, so Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Akiva answers, so how could I do differently? As we learned before, that a person is over on Divrei Sofrim, and that includes that a person has to wash his hands for bread, then a person is chayav misibidei shemayim. Mutav sha'omus misas atzmi, so better that I should die a natural death on my own, rather than being over on what my colleagues, the other chachamim, said. Technically, Tosfos and Marashah say, he would have been potter. The end of the previous perek, the Gemara mentions that even soldiers in an army camp, even when they're fighting a mochemes rishus, are potter from the tilos yadayim before eating. How much more so Rabbi Akiva in this situation, but he wanted to be machmir on himself. There is an interesting discussion about that, in that you have a famous machlokas rishonim on the question, are you allowed to be moser nefesh for anything other than the big three? The Rambam holds absolutely not. A person is moser nefesh for any of the other ones. He's mischayev benafsha, and he gets no schayev for it. On the other hand, Tosfos and a number of other rishonim, and the Rosh and a number of other rishonim hold that you could. So, for example, Tilos Yadayim is not one of the big three. So, according to the Rambam, on the face of it, Rabbi Akiva has no right to be Moser Nefesh for it. According to Tosfos and then everybody else, he would. So, to find for the Rambam, a couple of answers. One of the Mephoshim gives an answer that here it's not a direct thing that he's going to die from it. It would be more of an indirect thing. So, even the Rambam would allow it. And another possibility is Mephoshim and the Rambam explain that even the Rambam will agree that sometimes you have a case where people are careless with a certain mitzvah. So an Odom Gadol, a great person like Rabbi Akiva, is entitled to be Moser Nefesh on that mitzvah in order to strengthen the awareness of it among Jewish people. So that may have been the situation over here, that people were getting careless with the Tilos Yadayim, and therefore Rabbi Akiva has to reinforce it. Omru, so they said, Loi Tom Klumat Sheviule Mayim Venoto Yodim. Rabbi Akiva would not eat anything, he wouldn't taste any of the food that Rabbi Yeshua brought him until they brought him more water, and then he was able to wash his hands. Again, but Pashtos, we can understand, you know, the Romans, like we were saying before, they needed Rabbi Akiva more for the moment anyway. They needed him alive rather than dead, so they don't have a full scale revolt on their hands. Maybe also, who knows, maybe they were figuring maybe they can get Rabbi Akiva to sign some kind of paper or something saying that people shouldn't be looting Torah and keeping mitzvahs, you know, sort of like what you find that they tried to do with the Friedrich Rebbe, or whatever. So whatever the case, you know, if the only choice is that Rabbi Akiva is going to die of hunger over there, then they have no choice but to let him in, to let him have more water. So when the Chachamim heard what happened, Omru, they said, what? Because Rabbi Yeshua Agarsi told them. But you actually do find other examples throughout Shas. It mentions here and there things that happened while Rabbi Akiva was in jail. There were other Talmidim who were able at least to stand outside the jail and be able to hear Divrei Torah from him. So whatever, here we have Rabbi Shua Garsi himself, the Pashtus, was able to tell them the story. Anyway, so they said, look at this, if Rabbi Akiva is so careful with such a mitzvah, even when he's old and weak, we can imagine when he was younger and had more of the ability, Allah's kama v'kama, that he would have been careful with that. In Pashtus, we don't mean younger before he started learning Torah. We mean once he started learning Torah at age 40. And if he's so careful, even in jail, you can imagine how much more careful Rabbi Akiva must have been with this when he was at home. By the way, you know, there are poskim who say that that you could technically wrap up your hands in a cloth or something, or wear gloves or something, and eat bread without metilas yadayim. And so on the face of it, Rabbi Akiva could have done that. So again, one answer could be that he didn't want to use that, so other people are not mezalzim with metilas yadayim. But it's interesting because Alter Rebbe actually, at the end of Hilchos Metilas Yadayim in the Siddur, actually says there's absolutely no heter at all to eat bread by doing that. Other foods, things that you have to wash for, wet vegetables or wet fruits or whatever, yeah, you can get away with that, but not bread, he says. Maybe if you have a person is within 4 mil, there's no water, then maybe you could. But even then, he says, so that fits very well with the story over here. That's what Alter Rebbe is saying. That as far as bread, there's really no heter, except maybe if you don't have any water within 4 mil.
Yeah. So the glove doesn't work.
So the glove doesn't work for bread, according to Alter Rebbe. Yeah. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow. That's it then. Yom Yom Mashiach Geula. When Mashiach comes, Geula will turn into Geula by we put the letter Aleph into Geula. The letter Aleph, there's three meanings in it. And those represent three different types of the Gilui Elokus that will be. There's Aleph, Meloshon Aluf, the leader. So it means that by the Geula HaSidur, we'll see in a revealed way how Hashem is Aluf Shel Olam. We'll see the Koyach HaPoel B'Nifl, the Gilui Elokus within and Be'erech to the world. Unlike now, we only know of Elokus that's beyond the world. And then in the next two pieces, we'll continue with the Rebbe's other two explanations of what the word Aleph means. We were up to Simon Samach Hey in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, but that and Simon Samach Vav talk about Dinim of Ribis and Iska, and frankly, I think that's a little intense to be dealing with in this format over here. There's a lot of details in that that it's very, very easy to go wrong with. But Kitzur, if you have anything involving anything that might even be a possibility of Ribis, ask a Shaila. So I think let's skip that and go to Simon Samach Zayin, which is Halachas of Nedarim and Shavuos. So the first thing is a person should not regularly make nedarim, because as the Gemara says, a person makes a neder as if he's building a bummer at the time when bummers are also, and then if the person fulfills the neder, then it's like he brings the korban on it, which is chayiv because of shchut echutz. The better thing would be to be matir neder. However, that doesn't apply when it's nidre hekdesh, when it's a neder to give tzedakah or to give to a shul or whatever. Then it's a mitzvah to keep the nedarim l'Hashem Hashalem. Then you should only be matir neder only b'shas epchak. But other kinds of nedarim, for example, a neder, let's say not to eat something or not to do such and such or whatever, those were saying a person shouldn't make them to begin with. And if he does, you should be matir neder.